Jennifer Zamparelli, 2FM, good morning. So, let's talk about this, the word genius, because it gets used a lot, doesn't it? I mean, one of the top results on Google is 7 genius uses for peanut butter. And the website, genius.com, explains song lyrics. But what does it really mean, the word genius? And how can one human brain be so different from the rest that it can change the way we live and how we understand the world around us? Well, Dr. Neve Shaw is an engineer and a scientist and an educator, and she's here to talk about being a genius. Are you a bit of a genius?
No, I'm not. I actually, for the crack, did an IQ test last night.
And okay, where do you do that? Average. Where do you do the IQ test?
Well, there's a few online. I don't know how legit they are, but
so you did one last night?
I did, but I did really badly.
Oh God, that's
so disappointing. I don't know if I want to tell you the number. It was really bad.
Well, it doesn't make sense to me, but I know.
So a genius is is described, like a genius is termed somebody with above average intelligence. And the only way you can say like what's average intelligence, and there's different forms of intelligence, by the way. This is just a kind of a you know, lateral reasoning kind of intelligence. There's also linguistic intelligence, there's visual intelligence, there's emotional intelligence. So when people say genius, they're kind of talking about, you know, academic kind of the term for kind of intelligence. So what that is it's a measure of an intelligence quotient, so an IQ test, and where they say 100 is kind of deemed to be average intelligence. So if you've got above 100, you're considered intelligent, and then you're a genius if you're above 140.
Okay, so 140 or above. Now, did you do a general intelligence IQ test?
I did an IQ test.
Okay.
And I got 70 last night.
It's not bad.
What?
I definitely fare worse. But I would say I'm an emotional genius.
I would say I'm an emotional genius as well. I can read people, you know, but I think that the people that are geniuses tend not to be emotionally intelligent. So a lot of the people I went looking at, the most intelligent, or the people with the highest IQ here, and a lot of them would have, you know, they would have those conditions where emotional intelligence would be absent from their, you know, their natural sort of abilities. So I think it's like, you know, we're all given intelligence across different kind of ranges, and it's rare to have intelligence across all of them. So if you're strong in one, normally you're kind of deficient in one. So to be of average intelligence probably means that you're pretty good at reading people, you're pretty good, you know, at your basic linguistic skills, your basic visual skills, and you have an overall good intelligence.
So the IQ is a measure of, you know, your intelligence, or your, is there a test for emotional intelligence?
There probably is. There's probably a psychology test, I would say, for it. But I just focused on the classic meaning of the word. So,
okay.
So geniuses are anybody above 140. So if you look at Elon Musk, he's 155.
Okay.
Jeff Bezos, he's head of Amazon and Blue Origin, all these things, 142. Einstein was 160. So anybody who's above 160 is considered like mega genius. And when I looked into it, there was a ton from the past and also from contemporary days.
How do we know Einstein was 160 if he didn't jump online to do an IQ test?
That's a really good question. I guess it's based on what he managed to, you know, what he managed to discover in his lifetime, and his thinking, like how abstract his thinking was, and he wasn't good at maths. He used to get his mate to actually solve the problems for him. So he came up with the idea.
Well, that is very clever.
It's very clever. He had a maths pal, and he actually did all the calculations to support his theories.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So keeping with the past, so who else have you got in there? So Einstein is IQ 160.
Yeah. So Leonardo da Vinci, again, obviously there was no such thing as an IQ test then, but they reckon he had an intelligence even higher than Einstein, around 180 to 220, because not only was he really good at art, he also came up with loads of inventions, which, you know, like helicopter, he has drawings of. He wrote his notes backwards. There's secret messages in a lot of his notes. They reckon he was, you know, way above average. And, and he was, obviously, you know, he made a major contribution to the Renaissance art period and at that time. Shakespeare, they reckon, had an intelligence of about 210, and from studying it, they reckon it's because of his aptitude to rhyme. And you did, we all did Shakespeare in school, the iambic pentameter, ba 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 ba. Remember that?
Give me nightmares.
To be able to keep all of your text with that pentameter or that rhythm, and then also for it to be able to rhyme in couplets and stuff, that's a very lateral and a linguistic and a creative mind, you know. And then he wrote these really complex characters, so he was a very smart man. I reckon.
Yeah,
that's
but is he higher than Leonardo da Vinci?
just,
like they're saying he's about Shakespeare's about 210. Leonardo da Vinci was between 108 and
220. Yeah.
I'd say Leonardo because he kind of was across the board, you know, inventions, art, writing, you know.
Yeah,
you know?
I'd say he'd be better crack as well.
Much better crack.
Much better crack. The you know, at a party, who do you want to sit beside? Leonardo da Vinci or Shakespeare? Oh God, don't put me beside Shakespeare again. He just doesn't stop rhyming with that. Whereas Leonardo would be like abstract thinking and kind of coming up with iPads and stuff and boring out Shakespeare and tragedies and murders and all sorts of dark stuff, you know.
Niamh, who do you reckon is the smartest person you've ever met?
I was thinking about this. Okay, so there's two people. One is the man called Peter Higgs, and he was one of the discoverers, the guys that proved the Higgs particle, or the God particle that was proven in 2012. I don't know if you remember that back in the day, particle physics. But somebody that blew me away, who's very intelligent, is Jocelyn Bell Burnell. I was very lucky to meet her a couple of times. I was on a panel with her. So her PhD, she discovered what's known as pulsars, which is a form of a dying star that had never been discovered before, and it makes this repeated kind of a sound. It kind of basically it's spinning, and there's sort of a tail on it, and the tail kind of makes a different noise. So she discovered it, and initially thought it was just noise, and realised it was a new type of particle, the pulsar. But didn't her supervisor get the Nobel Prize?
Oh,
and she didn't.
Look it, and you met this woman.
Yeah, she's amazing. Do you know, she's the most humble person you'll meet as well. The great thing is, in 2018, she was given the Breakthrough Prize, which is a consortium with Mark Zuckerberg from Facebook and Stephen Hawking and all these other geniuses who are trying to figure out, is there life beyond, you know, Earth and our solar system and other amazing ideas. They gave her the Breakthrough Prize. You know what she did? You know what she did with it? She donated it to promote education and women in physics, and gives it away so that women have scholarship to study. She's amazing.
Was she any crack?
She's lovely. She's hilarious. She was going on about, she was teaching for a while, I think, in America, and she shared some of the answers from the real smart, you know, the kids that just didn't have a clue and wrote really smart answers and stuff. She's brilliant. She's
amazing.
Just lovely.
Okay, so let's stick with women for a second, because there's a huge list of lads
unsung
now through
heroes.
The past. Yeah, so can you tell me about some Irish women who've been overlooked, let's say, and we should know about more?
A lot of them. So my absolute like queen is Annie Maunder. So Annie Maunder is a woman that was born in County Tyrone, and she was hyper intelligent. She got a scholarship to go to secondary school in Belfast, and then she applied for a scholarship to Cambridge, and she went to Girton College, which was the only all-female college at the time. She got top in the class. She got top marks overall in Girton in the year that she finished her degree, and got second overall in the maths group with men and women. But in those days, it's only 1948 was the first year that Cambridge actually allowed women graduate with degrees. So she did the same exams, but was never actually allowed to get her degree. So she left, and they had to use influence to get her first job. So she got a job in Greenwich Observatory, the Royal Observatory in Greenwich. And she was known as a computer. So a computer was somebody that counted things or computed things. And she was put in this room, and they said, count the dots there on the star or on the sun. And she started kind of counting the amount of sunspots on the sun. Her direct report was a guy called Edmund Maunder, fell in love with her. And the two of them basically revolutionised how to take pictures of eclipses. She developed a whole new type of photography called heliophotography. But between herself and her husband, they realised that the sun has this cycle. And it's happening at the moment, which is why we're getting all the auroras and stuff at the moment. So it goes from like maximum activity, where there's all this electromagnetic activity, which causes the sunspots. And then it kind of dies down, and then it builds up again. And they logged loads of data, and they came up with this diagram that proved that the sun has a kind of a cycle. And it's only after years of her working with her husband that they finally kind of admitted that she was amazing. So I would love for Annie Maunder to get her degree at Cambridge posthumously. A lot of people in the space field, they love her, and there's a crater named after her on the moon.
Stop
the
it.
Maunder crater. We
well
love
that
her.
Is amazing. Anybody her. Else you want to mention?
Yeah, there's loads. Margaret Lindsay Huggins as well. So she again was somebody completely self-taught. She grew up in a fairly brainy family, in fairness. Her grandfather was a banker, but he also loved astronomy. So he had a telescope out the back, and she kind of watched and kind of was inspired by her grandfather to like astronomy. So she taught herself how to look at the night sky. And she also really liked photography. And she chased the people that had come up with this new interest in instrument called a spectroscope. So for anyone who's done Leaving Cert chemistry, the spectroscope is where you basically see these bands of different coloured light. So every single element in our universe, when you burn it, it'll split into different bands of light, and it gives you what's known as a spectrograph. So it's based on the seven of colours from the rainbow. Richard of York gave battle in vain. You remember that? And so she got very specialised in spectroscopy, and herself and her husband, again another duo, they started looking at the coronas, which are basically the layer of light that comes out around the sun and early emerging stars. So again, an amazing woman, and people hardly ever know about her, you know. There's a girl down in Cork, which is not, she's not a girl, she was a woman, from 1785, and she died in 1815. She didn't have very good health, but she single-handedly went around the Cork region and started classifying and drawing all the lichens and mosses and liverworts in the area. And her stuff is so good, it's kept in the Botanic Gardens in England and still used as reference to this day. And there's actually, there's a great website about her. Her name is Ellen Hutchins. And I think you can go down to her, where she's from Ballylickey in County Cork, and her stuff is beautiful. Because there are the people that did, you know, those botanists of the days, like they would draw these beautiful paintings of plants and show like what they look like. So that botanical art is as beautiful as anything
else.
Can
you tell us about, is it Adragon de Mello?
Oh, yes.
There's just because apparently the IQ was out of this world.
400, yeah. At the age of 11, he got a degree in computational maths from the University of California. The first child, the youngest person ever at the time. It's since been broken. But at the time at 11. Now, this is the thing about IQ, though. So they take into account your age when they really do your IQ test. So I think that's since been smashed. So he had an IQ of 400 at age 11, but he didn't necessarily have the same IQ when he got older because, you know, you skew it in favour of the age.
Okay.
But there was another Irish guy called Éanán Cowley who had an IQ of 263 at the age of 6. He gave a lecture at the age of 6. He got an A level in chemistry at the age of 8. His parents took him to Singapore. He now lives in Kuala Lumpur. At the age of 9, he was able to recite, you know, the way pi is 3.14, blah, 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 blah. He was able to recite 581 decimal places after that digital point on pi. He was able to recite it. And at 12, he wrote, he scripted and composed music for his own short movie. He's gone mad into the music now. So that's
mad into the music.
An Irish guy.
Unbelievable. I'm kind of tempted now to do an IQ test. I think we should all do an IQ test here on the team and just see what the results are.
Yeah. Yeah, but don't get 70. Get at least 100.
I'm definitely not getting 100.
You will get 100.
But I love that you said that your IQ is 70 because, I mean, you know, looking at you, an engineer, scientist, an educator.
Well, I did it a few years ago. I got 120. So I don't know what happened.
You
I was
tired
gutted.
Last night.
I was just, you know what, I was tired. Do you know what I was wrong, Jen? I just was tired. I just didn't get enough sleep. I bet if I did it now, I'd get 195.
Exactly. Be different motivation. do you think these people with these really high IQs, do you think they're happy? Are they happy in life?
I don't know.
You look at Elon Musk. And Bez are the most famous ones that we know.
They never
that
stop
in our
working.
Life.
I'd say they get about 15 minutes of sleep. Would you? I mean, how do you achieve that much in a day? I'm always amazed. Like, how do you do all that?
They get other people to do it. That's what they do.
Drink my coffee.
They're very good at time management, I think.
I think so.
You have to be.
And I think they're very fussy. You know what I mean? I think they do not compromise. You know, I think they all say, you know, with Steve Jobs as well and Elon Musk, they just said he is horrific to work for. He's a horrible person to work for. And Steve Jobs was the same.
Yeah.
So there's a cost to that perfectionism and that standard of excellence. While it's brilliant for the people at large, the people actually working directly with these people, they just go, oh my God, I can't cope. So.
Yeah, I'd rather be stupid and lovely. It's a much better place to be in. Niamh Shaw, thanks for coming in and telling us all about the word genius and what it really means. And we'll be back right after this. Jen Zamparelli on RTE 2FM.